may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Ryan Post. I'm an assistant attorney general with the state of Nebraska, here representing appellant John Gale. The fundamental flaw of the district court's decision was equating signatures with votes. And while those two may seem similar, ballot access provisions and elections serve different purposes. Ballot access provision, like this one, determine a minimum level of grassroots support to warrant inclusion on the ballot, while elections, as the court well knows, measure the collective aggregate will of the electorate. Additionally, the state-created right to initiative, as this court has held, is not a fundamental right. There's simply no right under the United States Constitution to initiate legislation at the statewide level. The state of Nebraska, in this instance, has chosen to grant the right subject to certain conditions, and since this is not a constitutionally compelled election, they have established this procedural and structural provision as a prerequisite. And the district court agreed that Section 2 was a procedural and structural provision. Additionally, the district court agreed that there's no suspect class involved. So the question really before the court is, does Section 2 of the Nebraska Constitution violate a fundamental right to vote? And it also...
Some states, as I understand it, don't even have this an initiative procedure.
That is correct. I would say there's about a dozen states in the country that have this sort of procedure. There are approximately five or six in the United States that have a procedure similar to Nebraska's.
Do you know whether the states that have no initiative procedure, whether they have been challenged because of the lack of that procedure?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Any cases that you're aware of that specifically talk about whether a state may permissibly decline to allow its citizens this opportunity?
Not that I'm aware of offhand, but I believe they could. I mean, since it's a state-created right, if the citizens choose to grant themselves that right for state law purposes, I think they could, just like Nebraska and many other states did here. And to your point, Arkansas has a similar provision to what Nebraska has. It's slightly different numbers, but it's the same general idea.
Well, they could probably petition the legislature of a state like that to enact a constitutional amendment. I suppose most of the states, the enacting clause probably requires the constitution adopted by a state to have an amending process, and so you could get to it, but it'd be a kind of a circuitous route. You'd have to get the constitution changed, and then you'd have to, under the constitution, get a new direct election kind of a thing adopted. And some states have just an amendment process to their constitution, but can't enact legislation under the direct approach. But Nebraska has both aspects of it.
That is correct. Yes. And I mean, this does beg the question, in this particular instance, when we're talking about an initiative, which is citizens directly proposing legislation, let's say that the initiative fails for some other reason, some other ballot access provision that's been upheld, and there's never a vote. Well, how can it violate the fundamental right to vote if there's not necessarily going to be an election? And that's what distinguishes Nebraska's situation from, say, Moore versus Ogilvie, which is relied upon by the appellee in this matter, is there we were talking about a presidential election, and that was going to happen. And so it does make sense that the Supreme Court was concerned with limiting access of candidates in the presidential election. But here, we're not talking about a federal election. We're talking about a state election that has been granted, but the citizens granted it to themselves under their constitution. One other note on this point is that the district court never, so once you step away from the Moore versus Ogilvie case and you look at the Burdick case, which comes afterwards, where they say that the court must weigh the character and magnitude of the asserted injury, and strict scrutiny only applies if it's severe, the district court didn't do that. It didn't really weigh anything in that regard at all. The district court simply, it never made any factual determination that this particular provision in the Nebraska Constitution was a, quote, integral part of the election process. And again, that makes sense, just like appellees have agreed, because this is a ballot access case. This is not about the election. There's many other provisions that kick in when you get on the ballot, but this is simply how to get on the ballot.
Once the state creates this process, would you agree that it still has to pass constitutional muster?
Oh, absolutely.
And how do you counter the assertion or the allegation that this is discriminatory?
Well, I mean, first, we have to take it out of strict scrutiny and look at rational basis. And then when we're in rational basis, the asserted interests of the state, and there's the 4th, 6th, and 10th circuits have talked about these different interests as it relates to ballot access provisions.
Well, what about the interests here in Nebraska? How do the interests outweigh the discrimination against the urban population?
That's kind of a two-part answer. First, I mean, the state of Nebraska has an interest in making sure that there's at least some showing of support statewide before they load up the ballot with initiatives. The second thing, and it kind of gets to the question of a suspect class, is, you know, first of all, the district court didn't find there was a suspect class. And secondly, how would you determine who's a member of the class? Because if we're just talking about urban dwellers versus rural dwellers, I mean, there's a number of counties in Nebraska that have a large urban population and a large rural population, and I'm not exactly sure how you would determine who fits in what category.
So your position is that it's not discriminatory?
I don't believe it's discriminatory, definitely under the strict scrutiny analysis, and I do believe that we satisfy rational basis. Just as a quick note, the appellees... for some reason, the district court enjoined Section 4 of the Nebraska Constitution, which relates to total number of signatures, and it does have some tangential relationship to Section 2, but the appellee never challenged that provision, and we're not quite sure why the district court enjoined Section 4, and so we'd obviously like that to be reversed.
this was submitted to the district court on a stipulated record, as I understand.
Yes.
In that stipulated record, what kinds of things will we find that go to this rational, the alleged rational basis that you mentioned of assuring some degree of statewide, geographical, grassroots kind of support for an initiated act? Was that just argument, or is there something, we're going to find some factual part of the record that supports that?
Well, and there's a little bit of both. It's definitely argument, but the one thing to consider is some of these changes to the Nebraska Constitution were done themselves as part of initiatives, so you're not going to have your typical legislative history sort of a situation. The second part of that, if you look at Appendix 1416, it does point out that this simply just hasn't been a problem in Nebraska. Since 2002, there's been, I believe, 12 initiative and referendum that have been proposed and at least submitted to the Secretary of State. And every single one of them has easily cleared this hurdle. And so it seems difficult to consider this a severe burden. They only need 5% of the registered voters and 2/5 of the counties, which comes out to about 38 out of Nebraska's 93 counties.
Well, isn't it the rural counties didn't want Lincoln or Omaha to have full control over this procedure, and since a lot of the economy of the state is generated in the agricultural economy out of state, they wanted to be sure that their interests were taken into effect before these things got put on the ballot and elected and imposed upon them. Isn't that the rationale for the legislative history that will show that in the legislature of the state of Nebraska?
And I think that the practical concern you're getting to is, based on all the other requirements, could you put something on the ballot and completely ignore everything except for Omaha? Possibly.
Well, 25% of the population is in Douglas County, and about 45% Douglas and Lancaster County. And we have a unicameral legislature, and there are 49 districts, and they didn't want the constitution changed to their detriment without some say in what got put on the ballot. That's the argument that was made.
I believe so, yes. It was that they wanted to have a showing that there was some statewide support before it was placed on the ballot. Lastly, before my time is up, if the judgment were to be upheld, we would ask that the attorney fee award be reduced for incomplete success. There was a paper signature provision or a claim that was dismissed based on claim and issue preclusion, and so it didn't make a lot of sense that that was awarded for fees. It was a completely separate issue. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Domina?
Yes, Your Honor. My parents' choice, but it's worked for years. So, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm here on behalf of Kent Birnbeck, who was successful below at striking provisions of the Nebraska Constitution concerning the rights of initiative and referendum. We concede that the federal Constitution does not compel a state to adopt an initiative or referendum process.
Fact is, when the Constitution was adopted, that was something that nobody had ever seen before, right?
I think that's true, Your Honor. The idea in the federal Constitution of petitioning the government for redress of grievances was much different from initiating laws legislatively. I enjoyed reading a little bit of history and gave you just a touch of flavor of that in my brief, but it is interesting to read the history. And the idea of citizens proposing laws and actually imposing them by majority vote probably isn't what the framers of the federal Constitution were talking about in the petition clause of the First Amendment.
Because they had town hall governments in the colonies and so forth. Let's go to the basic here. Did Mr. Birnbeck present any petitions, sign petitions or anything like that to the Secretary of State in support of this proposal, in other words, the constitutionality of it? As I understand it, he has a standing problem under the precedent that exists.
He has to establish standing. The district court found standing, Your Honor.
And I know he found standing, but it contrary to established precedent, in my view.
Well, I disagree with the court about standing precedent. Essentially, what's required to have standing to bring a case of this kind is to demonstrate a recurrent interest and activity in the subject matter, attempts to participate, and preclusion or an impediment to participation. And Mr. Birnbeck demonstrated all of those things.
What did he demonstrate by way of anybody else's interest besides his in this approach?
Well, he demonstrated that he has on a number of occasions in the course of his adult lifetime participated.
Well, he has. I'm talking about, you said, I thought you were talking about a broader interest than just Mr. Birnbeck, who comes to the Secretary of State and says, here's what I want to do.
No, I was referring only to Mr. Birnbeck's interest. Because on this narrow issue of standing, only Mr. Birnbeck's interest is of concern to the court. If Mr. Birnbeck has standing to present the issue, and we think he does because of his history, and frankly, I don't know how one would get standing otherwise except to go all the way through the petition process, fail and be blocked because you can't get the 38th county under the state constitution, and then present the failed effort. And
I'm
what he
sure that you'd have to go all the way through, but you'd have to, under the precedent, it seems to me, as I read it, you'd have to make some effort to go through the procedure and say to the Secretary of State, I have a bunch of signatures in Lincoln and Omaha. That's what he wants to do, as I understand it, at least there, that the folks in Lincoln and Omaha want to do this, and that might have given him standing, but he didn't even do that.
Your Honor, here what he did was that he took the first step with the Nebraska Secretary of State. He made a filing indicating what it was that he wanted to initiate.
The Constitution is the state elections office.
That's correct. And then instead of gathering signatures pursuant to that filing, he went to a whole series of municipalities in and across the state and attempted at the municipal level to get municipalities to adopt ordinances that would change the municipal initiative and referendum process as a way to try to get attention to his issue so he'd have a chance to make the 38-county standard. He concluded he couldn't do it. He then filed suit in court. So he took serious steps to try to, in fact, legislate. And it's interesting that what he wanted to legislate was a change in the 38-county requirement.
But he wasn't getting much interest in this whole project.
Well, there's no evidence in the record that that is so. Now, you know, frankly, there's nothing in the record that suggests
in the record that isn't so.
Well, there's evidence that there were some municipalities that received his petitions, and there were some municipalities. I think there's evidence in the record. I'm not positive this is in the record, but at least one municipality put it on the ballot. And another municipality went to court against him in the District Court of Lancaster County about it. So he genuinely tried, and I think that standing is present here. The broader interest issue really brings us to equal protection and the rational basis argument. I think the Attorney General has here, to some extent, confused the two standards before you. When the question is equal protection, does the initiative and referendum process in Nebraska offend the equal protection provisions of the 14th Amendment, then the test is whether the state has a rational basis for the constraints that it has imposed on the process.
Do you agree that the rational basis is the test?
Yes, I do. Okay. Now, and under the 14th Amendment, the Attorney General advances these rational bases. Number one, the state has an interest in broad geographic support. Number two, it wants to avoid local legislation. Number three, it says, interestingly, that it wants to protect the minority from majority rule. That's verbatim from its brief. And fourth, it's concerned about uninformed voters. In 1984, the United States District Court for the District of Nebraska, Judge Robert Van Pelt, issued an opinion in a case called Libertarian Party versus Bierman. Mr. Bierman was then our Secretary of State. Judge Van Pelt wrote, look, there's a simple solution to this. Make your geographic distribution be based on requirements out of each congressional district. Then you don't offend the idea that all of the electors have to have equal power, and you solve your equal protection problem. Now, Judge Van Pelt adopted a view and expressed a view that has since been followed by several circuits and strongly suggested by the United States Supreme Court. If the geographic distribution requirement is based on a distribution that recognizes equal populations, like congressional districts, that distribution requirement is valid.
Was Judge Van Pelt's decision appealed?
No, it was not. So the legislature had 31 years before Judge Battalion wrestled with this to solve this problem, and in the meantime, the U.S. Supreme Court addressed it, this court addressed it, several other circuits addressed it, and Judge Shepard, to your question about whether another court has looked at this as you asked, I'd suggest that you take a look at Idaho Coalition for Bears versus Canarusa. The Ninth Circuit there, I think, did deal expressly with the question of whether a state has to give this right and clearly holds that it doesn't, but if the state does confer the right, it has to do it in a way that doesn't deny equal protection of the laws. And equal protection of the law is denied not merely when there's a disparity in the power of the ballot, but when there is a disparity in the power of the elector. And in this case, what happens is that a single elector in our least populous county, Arthur County, has the power of 945 electors in our most populous county, Douglas County. In Logan County, Your Honor, that'd be about 635 electors for each one in Douglas County. Well-deserved representation. I know of an election in Logan County where the two candidates in a primary tied, running as Democrats with 22 votes apiece. Now, that wouldn't happen in Douglas County.
That was in the 1930s when Franklin D. Roosevelt was running.
That was in the 1980s when somebody else was running. But in any event, my point is simple, and that is that there is a disparity in the power of the electorate, of the elector, and that's the disparity that offends the 14th Amendment and that Judge Battalion ruled in our favor for.
Well, but what about the... seems to me you're kind of running a... going astray from discussing a rational basis, and what about the argument that geographic representation at least provides a rational basis? The idea that, people in rural areas and small towns have different perspectives in a lot of ways as those in larger cities. And what's wrong with that basis for this requirement?
Your Honor, there is nothing wrong with that requirement so long as the geographic distribution is also done in a way that recognizes population balance. So in Nebraska, for example, one congressional district consists of 1.5 counties. A second congressional district consists of 18 counties, and our third congressional district consists of 80.5 counties. Or 80 counties. We've got. I put the half in the wrong place.
The best case that you have to support that idea in the realm of state structures for initiated acts.
Well, I'll offer you four, all from the United States Supreme Court. First, Gray versus Sanders in 1963, it invalidated a Georgia law adopting a county unit system based only partially on population for the election of its legislators, 372 U.S. 368. Reynolds versus Sims, which did the same thing in Alabama, using counties and not equal populations to adopt allow recognition of representation in its legislature, 377 U.S. 533. Moore versus Ogilvie, 394 U.S. 814. That was an Illinois law stricken because it constrained the creation of new political parties by requiring a distribution that was based on counties and not on populations. And Gordon versus Lance, 403 U.S. 1, 1971, which essentially did the same thing and held that with respect to matters of statewide concern, you can have geographic distribution, but they have to be based on population divisions.
But none of those, according to what I wrote down, at least two or three of those, perhaps all of them, involve election of representatives and not this subject matter of initiated acts.
Well, Your Honor, that may be true, but one of them involves the formation of a new political party. But in this case, what our state constitution does is to constrain the right of the people to make or repeal laws. All a legislature can do when it's elected is make or repeal laws. So instead of imposing the requirement on the process of selecting people with that authority, this constitutional constraint imposes it on the right of the people to do it themselves. And that being the case, it's constitutionally impermissible. There's an easy solution, and the courts have recognized that solution. I'm not aware of a single case that has allowed one of these geographic distribution requirements to stand where there is no relationship to the population within the geographic unit. Engel versus Meyer in 2012 out of the Ninth Circuit dealt with geographic distribution and upheld it in Nevada where the distribution was based on the congressional districts. So you have a little bitty geographic congressional district at Las Vegas and a great big one that covers most of the state, just like Nebraska, and as long as you had the same fraction from each district, that was permissible. That's what Judge Van Pelt foretold 30 years ago. The same was true of Libertarian Party of Virginia versus Davis, and this court's decision in Libertarian Party of Missouri versus Bond back in 1985, where you upheld a Missouri law concerning the formation of new political parties, where Missouri imposed a geographic distribution requirement, but it was based on the geography and populations of congressional districts. What we want here is to make sure that all of the electors of the five most populous counties, to use the example in my brief, 42% of the state, could be in a position where they are unanimous, but they can't get 33 more counties, to join them, so they can't get something on the ballot. But they could get enough people from a congressional district to do it. The county unit is the unfairness here. Thank you very much.
How much time does council have?
4 minutes, Your Honor.
Based on Appley's arguments today, we have a ballot access case that's subject to rational basis, and maybe there might be another way we could do this differently, but we don't have to. I mean, that's what we've heard today. Another rational basis that I, or another reason that I failed to mention earlier to Judge Beam's question is the desire of the electorate to limit the possibility of localized legislation. That was in our brief. I would direct the court's attention to the Kendall case out of the 10th Circuit, where they also stated that ensuring that the state should not incur the considerable administrative responsibilities attending to the petition unless there is a proven interest by a reasonably large segment of the electorate. And that's the 10th Circuit. It was a slightly different factual scenario, but they agreed with Appellant Gale here that that was a rational basis. Just a very quick note on Idaho Coalition. I believe the court picked up on, but that Idaho Coalition was analyzed under strict scrutiny, not under rational basis, so that case wouldn't apply under the arguments you've heard today. As well as there's a case out of the Massachusetts Supreme Court, Massachusetts Public Interest Research Group, which is much more similar to the case you have today involving a distribution requirement, and they upheld that provision.
What about the I don't know how to pronounce this, Dobrovolny versus Moore case, which is one of our cases where this court stated that the right to a state initiative process is not a right guaranteed by the United States Constitution, and then we further said, clearly appellants can claim no constitutionally protected right to place issues before the Nebraska electorate. Any opportunity to do so must be subject to compliance with state constitutional requirements. Had the state constitutional requirements been advanced here? This runs contrary to the state constitutional requirements, this effort, right, or not?
I'm not aware that they've been advanced in this instance. At least the district court didn't ever address it.
Is that still good law in Nebraska, those cases? Was that law that the district judge should have considered here?
Whether or not it violated the state equal protection clause, is that kind of the...
But whether there is a federal constitutional right to require the state to do something different than it's done here.
Oh, I mean, I would definitely agree with the Dobrovolny case that the state of Nebraska, I mean, if we are, there's no state or there's no federal right to pursue this initiative process, but if we do, then we have to abide by the U.S. Constitution. The district court did consider that case, but it was in the First Amendment context and didn't necessarily consider it in the equal protection context.
And denied the First Amendment claim, right?
Correct, and that was not raised on a cross appeal. So if the court has no further questions, we would ask that you uphold the constitutionality of Nebraska's signature distribution requirement and reverse the judgment of the district court on that claim. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Well, you finished up our week with a very interesting case.